Come with us on a journey into the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable. We will test your senses and challenge your beliefs. A world where science and religion clash. Or do they? You will meet real people and hear real stories, but you will not believe. You will witness strange sights and hear strange sounds, but you will not believe. This is the New England Ghost Project. Welcome to the nightmare.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Ghost Chronicles. And we're back again.
Whether you want us or not, yeah. We keep coming back.
And this time, we're on the road to a very interesting place.
This is the most amazing place I think I've ever seen.
Other words,
and I haven't even scratched the surface.
You ain't seen nothing. So we are at the Governor's Mansion. Now, I don't know why it's called the Governor's Mansion, but I'm sure our guests can tell us. He is the owner of the Governor's Mansion, George Blaisdell.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, George. Thanks for letting us come here.
Oh, you're welcome. You're
so, George, why is it the Governor's Mansion?
It was the Governor's Mansion because, you can take a picture of it. So when I came here back in 1999 is when I bought the property. It was advertised as the Governor's Mansion.
Oh.
And come to find out, it was Warren Brown. Supposedly he ran for governor, never became governor, but had all the aspirations of becoming governor. But ever since then, it was known as the Governor's Mansion.
Uh-huh. Even though he was never governor.
Right, even though he was never governor. First house on the seacoast with running water, first house on the seacoast with gas lighting. So a lot of firsts. One of the largest properties in southern Hampshire.
How old is the house?
1880.
1880.
But the house was built, this house was built on another home that the family owned that was from the 1700s. They destroyed it because Sarah Brown liked the parcel. So, yeah.
This place has certainly changed over the years from 1890. And it's probably one of the most amazing places I've ever seen. I call it, and I hope you're not offended by it, but I call it Winchester House East. Because you keep adding to it. It
keeps going.
And I went to the Winchester House, and when I went there, it was an epiphany. Because she has a windmill, like my windmill, same shape, same everything, except my windmill had been kind of like falling apart and not taken care of, like the Winchester Mansion up in San Jose. And I went there, and I have pulleys in my barn, or my windmill, and it was like, what are these for? And then I went there, and it was just like, oh my God, that makes sense. You know, like, you know, one lung motors and everything to pump it when there's no wind, right?
Okay.
You don't think of that unless you see it. But there were so many pieces that she had intact that my house, because her house is 1880, my house is 1880.
Oh, wow.
Very similar. Mm-hmm. And both Sarah Brown built this house. That Sarah Winchester built that house. Yeah. So many
it was.
But going there seriously was almost like a religious experience. I had like the goosebumps. And I've been telling Tony, who works with the other guys, that I want to take you when we start working in the ballroom. I want you to go to the Winchester house so we can see it and we can take inspiration from that. So when we build my ballroom, we finish it on the inside, we really connect to that.
Wow, that would be awesome.
So where the ballroom is another addition?
Ballrooms, yeah. It's an addition in process, yeah. Because I don't like to build with just material from Lowe's. I want to find my material. I want to find all the pieces.
Oh, nice.
So when you go in, you're back in time. It's not just we're making something look old. We're actually...
It's actually got the energy imparted into the material as
That's
well.
That's exactly right.
Rather than the new stuff.
Right.
But you told me an interesting story of how you purchased this house.
Oh, very interesting. So back in 1999, I was whitewater rafting in August. And the last set of rapids, I fell out of the boat. And it wasn't like I fell out of the boat. I remember just being in the boat, last set of rapids. And all of a sudden, I just got like pulled out of the boat. Mm-hmm. And I got sucked underneath the boat. My friends didn't realize they were standing on my chest. They were drowning me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm underwater. My head is getting banged against the rocks. And I finally got them off of me, and they're grabbing me, and they're drowning me. So I finally got their hands off of me and pushed the boat down the river. And then I came down after them, and I'm like getting back into the boat, and I'm like, oh woozy.
Wow.
And a couple hours later, we're at the campground, and I just start getting tired and nauseous. I start throwing up. Then all of a sudden, I'm at the campfire at night, and still not feeling well, and just watching the campfire. And just like that, I go blind. And everyone looks at me. They go, George, you okay? I said, no, I'm blind. They go, what do you mean you're blind? I said, I mean, I can't see. What do you mean blind? I go, like, nothing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And they called the guy who ran the campground. He looked at me, and he says, oh, boy. you have a massive concussion.
Yeah.
Go to the hospital. And we went to Colebrook Hospital, which wasn't open 24 hours a day.
Oh, jeez.
So they had to ring the button. The guy came and looked at me, brings me in the hospital, says, can you read the eye chart? It's like, I'm blind. And I could, it was just like, I mean, I could see, like, if you shined a flashlight in my eye, I could tell if it was light or dark, but that's it. I had, like, no vision, really, of anything. Couldn't see. So the guy, looks at me. He says, nothing I can do for you up here. I'm going to have to, bring you down south. And, guys keep on waking him up and ask him who he is and, what day it is and stuff like that during the middle of the night. And I was fine. And one of my friends drove me home. Then when I got in, like, cell phone range, because cell phones didn't work up in Northern Hampshire back in 99.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got in cell phone range, I called my wife, told her to call my doctor. Doctor called the hospital, arranged a CAT scan. As I'm sitting at home waiting for my appointment, I tell my wife to read the want ads. And I go, can you read me the want ads? She goes, why? I said, I don't know, but you got to read me the want ads. She goes, what section? I go, the real estate section. She goes, why? I said, I don't know. She goes, oh, here's one. She goes, the governor's mansion, Hampton Falls. And I went, okay, after my CAT scan, I said, after my neurology appointment tomorrow, I want to go see the house. I said, give me the phone, and I want to dial
house?
Yeah, I want to call my buddy Rich Landry and have him show us the house after the appointment. And that's what I did. So I got the CAT scan. Next day comes, I go to the neurologist appointment. I come here, pull in the yard. Both of them will hold me by the hand because I'm blind. They bring me in the front door, the whole thing is weird. And I go in the front door, and I said to them, I go, is there a lady at the bottom of the staircase holding up a light? And they go, yeah, how do you know? I said, I don't know. We have to buy the house.
Oh, my God.
And I owned it by Friday.
Wow.
Holy crap.
So, yeah. Virtually sight unseen.
Yeah. But had I been able to see, knowing all the work it needed, I never would have bought it. So the only way I could be here is by not being able to know what I was buying. It was not a window in the windmill. That took out three pickup truck beds of just animal nesting material.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Right? I fell through the floor of that building.
Ouch.
Oh, my God.
This building, the whole attic was just like...
Oh, wow.
Just water damage and just...
Yeah. Can we back up for a minute?
Yeah.
When did you get your sight back?
About 6 weeks later.
Oh, my God.
And then I had 20/100 vision. So I had this eye. I had a Coke bottle lens in this eye. And just a regular lens in this eye.
Oh,
and about a year after that, I'm playing racquetball at Cedardale in Haverhill. Guy comes into the court. I'm in the A League of racquetball. So, if the guy comes for the A League, you're thinking he knows how to play.
Right.
He goes, you want him more? I said, sure. He comes on the court, had no idea how to play.
Oh, my gosh.
The first hit, he goes, eh. He slices the ball, hits me dead in this eye. I mean, from point blank range. No, none of my skull got hit by the ball. 100% of a racquetball in my eye. And no goggles because I was warming up. And he blew up my retina. So I was held by just a few points.
Oh.
And I went to this eye drop ophthalmologist in Haverhill after I went to the emergency room, obviously. And he's telling me, he says, okay, you got to lay down your face. You got to, do this for a week and what have you. And my eye was all full of blood, so I had zero eyesight.
No.
And 6-8 weeks later, my eyes, it drains the blood. And as I could start seeing, everything was amber. And it was like someone had a, coin in front of my eye for the longest time.
Oh, my God.
And then all of a sudden, I go to the doctors, and I'm saying, my glasses aren't working. I can't really see. And he puts me in the machine. He goes, how's this? Nope, doesn't. I go, nope. How's this? Nope. He goes, how's this? I go, yeah, I can see. I go, how bad is it? He goes, can't explain it. You have 20/20 vision again in your eye.
He just doesn't even know.
So I don't wear glasses anymore.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So.
Geez, maybe I'll have you do that to me.
Yeah.
Give me a whack in the ass.
Instead of LASIK.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. That day, I never saw that guy before. And after that, I never saw him again.
He was probably too embarrassed to show his family.
To come back.
But he just ran away, too. It wasn't, I'm sorry, or anything.
He ran away?
Just gone. Just gone. There was no. Just left me then.
He never existed.
Yeah, but seriously, no one knows who he was because I just wanted to punch the guy in the face. But it was just very bizarre.
Yeah.
Right,
you don't think that weird
bizarre,
like that?
Right?
They really do. I mean, on my honeymoon, right? I played hockey, so I'd screwed my
elbow
up. I couldn't open up my elbow at all, right? So during our honeymoon, I forget what was going on, but whatever. So Jan threw a bottle of powder at me, cracked me in the elbow, and then bang, it was fine. Same things happen for a reason. Although yours is much better.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I saw Jan again.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good.
51 years, wow. I've seen her.
So we need to see this property. I haven't seen it yet. Ron has been here before. I missed it. So
we came up, thanks to George, he invited us up to, well, actually he met Laura Worcester.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Laura.
Who conducted a seance here. And he was impressed with her.
Very impressed. Yeah.
She's amazing.
And she mentioned that you were looking for someone to investigate on the anniversary or whatever. And then, she recommended me, but she said, give him a call. And so I called him and we set it up. We came down. It was an amazing place. I'm still amazed every time I came.
He rambled to me. He was trying to
how
tell
cool
me everything
was.
That was here.
Was
you should have
cool.
seen this and you should have seen that. No, there was this and there was that. And I'm like, oh, okay.
And then we did our investigation here, and George and Anthony, I got it right.
You got it right.
I called Andy, but I didn't. We're here filming, and their cameras, they got nothing on the film. Our cameras were all screwed up. The audio was garbage.
Making me nervous.
It was terrible.
I hope that's working well. The red light's on, I know that.
So, where are we now, George?
We're in the basement. So
is this the basement?
When
of the original
house? Moved in here, the swell, right? This is a card table now.
Yeah.
So, but when I moved in here, this was all muck and dirt, and it had a brick floor, but there was so much dirt covering it, you had no idea.
So, I mean, we're in the basement right now, and this place is absolutely amazing. There's lots of things which we're going to show you in a minute.
So much.
But where do you get your inspiration for this?
It just comes to me through meditation. So I meditate religiously, and I just all of a sudden get a feeling, a sensation, or a drive to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I get pulled in certain ways. Like the ballroom I've been working on for, I don't know how many years, for 7 years. But I can only build so far, and then it's like I need pieces. And it's like, oh, I need my pieces. I can't go any further. You know, I know there's something I'm going to find because I know what I want it to look like. I just don't have what I need to continue.
Right.
And there's just, so I know the final product and I just haven't found it. But now I've got all the pieces. So I have no excuse for not continuing.
And we came up on that driveway, that cobblestone driveway.
Cobblestone.
Where did that cobblestone come from?
It's Lafayette Square in Haverhill.
Oh.
See, everything he has, it has a purpose.
Repurposed.
Yeah, repurposed. Yep. But it has already been used. So that energy is already imparted in
it. It is. It's so important. Like right in front of the house, I have a stone wall. I built you so it's like a castle up front.
Right.
So when I was in Glastonbury, I took stones from the monastery or whatever where King Arthur and Guinevere were buried. And actually, I was sitting there doing a meditation, and all of a sudden, these stones started hitting me. And that's when I got the idea. All of a sudden, it was like, bing, 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 and I'm getting hit, and it's like, what's going on? And I was the only one to get hit by stones.
Hmm.
So it was just, and I'm it's like, okay, I knew I wanted to put a wall, like a retaining wall out there, and it was just like, wait a minute. And I had to come up with the, so I took the stones, and then I also took those same exact stones to Tintagel. So Tintagel is supposedly the birthplace of King Arthur, right, on the coast, which was stunning. I want to go back there. And Merlin's cave and all of that. I took those same stones and I washed them in the water and I brought more stones from Tintagel and I videotaped myself putting them in the stone wall as we're building it.
That's
so cool. That wall now has all of the energy.
That's cool.
Of King Arthur. We were sitting down here. This is the area underneath the kitchen. But anyway, when I'm working down here, I would always see cats out of the corner of my eye. And we didn't have cats at the time. And I'd be like, what the hell? And I'm thinking, because you could walk right down the basement. I mean, we had like a rickety old door and no secondary door here. So any animals could come down here. And I'm thinking, why are all these cats down here? And then I'd look and I'd try to find the cats and shoo them out of here. And there wouldn't be any cats I could find. And then I'd always see like a little boy. And I was an atheist when I came here. I did not believe in anything.
Wow.
Yeah, a devout atheist. So if there's such a thing as a devout atheist that believes in nothing, right, that was me. That was, and I, if someone started talking to me about God, and yeah, there's pills for people like you. Okay. And I was so convinced of that. So, but being here and seeing that, it's like, no, what the hell is that? And I'd always, and I'd see him, like, literally over in the corner. And he'd be like watching me or doing something. And be like, it's like, no, nah, that can't be. That can't be. So that's kind of, and then the other sense I always had coming down here is that I always had a feeling that down here you get punished. If you got sent to the basement, you got punished. Uh-huh. So that's why we have a bathroom, but the bathroom is really not a bathroom. The bathroom's a jail cell.
It's a cell.
Right? To kind of, you know, I want to preserve that sense that, like, when someone comes down here and says, oh my God, got a jail cell. It's like, yeah, because when people came down here, they got punished. This was not a good place.
Wow.
So.
And that's the first thing I saw when I came in here is I saw the little door and I thought, oh my God, is that a sauna? Yeah. And I looked in and I'm like, oh, it's a bathroom. Wait, there's a bed in it. It's a guest room? They're like, no, it's a
very
cell.
Special guest room.
They can lock you in.
I mean, this has a lot of energy, but you also have a place of meditation in here with a sauna and a table for massages and
yeah.
And so forth down here too as well. Do you find that with that area has a different vibe than
absolutely.
The rest of the
building? That area is just, it's completely different than the rest of the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. It's like its own little environment. That just that one little room, when that one room, you feel completely different in there than even the new part that has my gym that's part that goes underneath the ballroom. That feels different than that sauna area. It's just a very weird kind of vibe
mm-hmm.
that you get. And it's very tranquil in there. It's very peaceful. And you can go in and meditate in the sauna. I just can relax and, you know, do the heated meditation. But you don't get freaked out at all. Like some of the other parts here, like I couldn't meditate here because I'd feel like someone's looking at me.
Really? Yeah.
Right? So you can't have that when you're meditating. You can't
yeah.
get like
no.
the heebie-jeebies.
Right,
right.
Right? I feel really calm in here.
Yeah.
Like it's
well,
very, I feel very relaxed.
We were here in August and Leslie and who is it? Me and myself. And we would walk around because we feel the vibrations of the building and so forth. And we walked into the sauna and it was like, totally different. You've got a lot of paraphernalia on the wall, don't you?
Rock and roll memorabilia.
Yeah.
Yeah, records.
What?
I just, I don't know. I love the energy of music, so I've mm-hmm. collected albums for a long time.
Signed albums?
Oh, yeah, autographed albums.
Nice.
You
yes.
got some guitars, too, I see.
Yeah, about, you know, half dozen, no, about a dozen guitars at this point. Yeah,
wow.
All autographed.
Autographed
nice.
Guitars.
Yeah.
Nice. I love records. I
yeah.
buy records whenever I can.
Well, music, right?
Yeah.
This is the vibration of the...
Yeah,
right?
The
it's all...
Yeah.
That's what the spirituals used
yeah.
to do when they ran their seances. They used to sing, they used to,
yeah.
you know, play loud music as well. They had seance music. I've got it actually in a recording of an old seance.
Well, I have, like in the second floor of the windmill, I have the horns
no.
up there
really?
Waiting for
nice.
Some sound to
pop
go through.
One of these days.
Yeah. I've been here for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first 6 years of it as someone who would die, it's just push away any kind of, and I'd rationalize everything that happened to me. Voices, sounds, things moving. It'd be like, there's a reason for it. So anyway, the story of the well, like I don't think I ever told you this, but and everything I'm telling you is 100% real. I mean, I would testify in a court of law to all of this. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's pretty far, some of the stuff is pretty far out. So even for me, if I heard it, I'd say, no, it's not true. So, but it really is. So anyway, so I'm building, you saw my Ogun room, right? My
yeah.
meditation room.
Which we're going to see a little later.
Okay, so I have a meditation room, and I was building the chandelier, which is 4 feet tall, and it's like
that's
4 feet
amazing.
Wide.
How
so,
many crystals are in it?
Oh, 1,000. So, yeah, but all hand-wrapped and with copper and everything.
Wow.
And the whole structure is hand-wrapped in copper, just copper wire. So what I did is I built that. I put it on top. This wasn't here. It was just basically the end of a AT&T wire, you know, spool.
Like spool.
Yeah, I have cover in that. So I have this big thing on there. So in between lifting weights, in between my sets, I go and wrap. I take, you know, maybe 5-6 foot strips of copper wire, and I'd wrap it. And then I go back to exercising.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I have it down here. I'm doing that. And I have sat right on top of this well. And it was It was the Sunday after New Year's, about 2018, and I have the thing. It was only on there a day or two. I'm exercising, and it was a Saturday, because I had just repaired my jukebox upstairs. So I had one of those electronic jukeboxes.
Yeah.
It looks like an old Wurlitzer, but it's just electronic.
Yeah, that's
so cool. Okay, I just had it back, and the moment we fired it up, it played the Phil Collins song that I told my daughter I'd never play again. And it played it throughout the entire house, and it blared it like at full blast.
Oh, my God.
And she goes, "What the hell are you doing?" And I go, "No, Al, I won't play that song ever again. Don't worry. I'm moving on. I'm trying to move on." And, I mean, but literally, like, shook the whole house. The thing just, like, fired up. So anyways, later that day, I had the stereo on, and I just had it just playing, you know, a random selection of CDs. And, you know, I did one CD, then the next CD, then the next CD.
Right.
So it wasn't anything special. I just punched in a bunch of them to come down here, and I had it playing. And I'm exercising. And all of a sudden, as I'm exercising, it sounded like it skipped. You know, like when you're a kid and the record skipped?
Oh, yeah.
And they went, and it's like, what the hell? And it's like, nah, it can't be. And I hear it again. And it's like, no. And so I walk out of the room, and I'm like in the doorway, where you can see if you look down this hallway, I'm in the doorway, and I'm like listening, and all of a sudden I look and I say to myself, the wine cellar door is open. That's weird, I should shut it. And the next thing I know, I mean, I never moved from that spot, but the next thing I know, that wine cellar door is shut.
A window, I guess.
Yeah, that's shut. I'm still standing there, and it's like, okay, what happened? And it was just like weird. And then this thing starts, does a little skip again. And then I walk out into the center. And all of a sudden, the CD starts talking to me. So it was like three words from this song and five words from this. It was insane. It was like something you'd see in a movie. And it starts literally like talking to me. And it's like, I'm start talking back. And I go, I know what you're saying, but I need to go upstairs. And I'm like literally talking to the thing. I'm going, I need to go upstairs. Just to make sure I'm not losing my mind. And I start walking to the stairs, and right from this chandelier, right from this well, this ball of light, about that big, about the size of a softball, flies at me, spins around me, right? Like, and I don't know if I'm paralyzed because of it, or I'm just scared shitless. Right? So I'm just standing there, and as I'm standing there, the song that I told my daughter I'd never play, which was Phil Collins in the Air Tonight, that plays. Okay, no one's home. I mean, no one's home. My wife and my two kids are with her at her family's like Christmas Day celebration after the fact. So I'm the only one home, and that song comes on. It starts playing, and I can't move. And for the whole song, the whole duration, this white orb is spinning around me. And I honestly, I think about it all the time because I don't know if I was terrified of the thing spinning around me or I actually paralyzed me. I don't even know.
Interesting.
And, as soon as the song ended, the thing spun off into the boiler room area, that storage area, and I ran up the stairs like you wouldn't believe. I mean, I was just done. I was like, gone, up the stairs. And I just waited for everyone to come home, and I like kind of like, said, asked my wife, can you come down with me? I was terrified to come back. It was the craziest thing I've ever experienced.
We are sitting on the poker table. We're sitting
at the poker table.
This is an overflow poker table because I have a poker room. But this is an overflow one. So that was the idea. So we have a well down here. It goes down 22 feet.
So what's
an original
I know you mentioned the well originally about the overflowing and the thing. But there's a story about something in the well too, isn't there?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, we were doing the table and we're doing these cabinets and showcases and so forth. So we have an underwater camera. And the water is, you know, somewhat murky and stuff like that. So let's try it out. Right, and we sent it down there, and it's got its own light on the head of it. So we send it down, and all of a sudden we look what appears to be the head of a child and the shoulder of a child. So, and it's like, and we're watching it on the camera, and it's like, that can't be.
Please,
and we're looking, and it's like, okay, bring the camera, bring it around again. And you could see like the ear, the head, the shoulder, and then it was like covered in silt at the bottom of the well. And it was just like, okay. So what I did is I took the disc, or the little SD card, I brought it to the police station, and I went to the police chief. I said, I want you to see something. He goes, what am I going to see? I said, no. I go, you tell me what you see. And he looks at me, and he goes, that looks pretty suspicious. So he brought a team over, and unfortunately they sent one of those robots, which is almost the size of the well.
Yeah.
And all it did was kick up dirt. So eventually what I'd like to do is get down there, but the water level, we have to have a dry, really dry summer to get down there and see what's really down there.
Oh, you certainly didn't have it this summer.
Yeah, no. There's just no way. And if I do have a 4-inch power, pump, but it would destroy if any kind of evidence. It would just suck it up and destroy it, so I can't do that. So I really need to wait that we can use a really gentle pump to kind of like accelerate the process. But there's no way that thing wouldn't just keep on filling up.
If you don't mind, would you show us some of this place that you have here? It's an amazing place.
Yes.
What would you like to see, or what would you like to know?
Oh, everything.
So when we were redoing the basement, so I had a mason down here doing the walls, and we were doing the sauna, and had an electrician. I hired the electrician's sister to come here and do some work and, kind of help him out and stuff. So her first day, she comes in here, and I meet her, as I do everybody. And we're talking, I'm telling about the project and how we're, digging up the floor as well and all of that. And she goes, "Where'd the little boy go?" And I go, "What little boy?" She goes, "The little boy that was standing next to you." She goes, "Your son." I go, "My son's in school." She goes, no, seriously." She goes, "There was a little boy standing right next to you. Where did he go?" I go, "Was he about that tall, had a white shirt on and blue pants?" She goes, yeah, that's him." I go, "He's a ghost." She goes, "No, seriously." I said, "No, seriously." And like literally she starts crying and shaking, and she just ran away. That was it. So she was employed for about 45 minutes. And that was it. But literally she melted down right in front of me and started crying and like literally shaking and just took off. That was the end of it. I have a mason who's worked for me for several years at this point, working on this specifically, this wall.
Yep.
And it was mid-October. About 4 years ago, probably 2019. And he's working on it. And I had a pile of stones down here at the time to make it easy for him. And he's picking through the stones. And this is before I mowed the field, so it's pretty high grass. And this kid comes out of the tall grass from across the street and comes up to him dressed in a white shirt, blue pants, and brilliant white shoes. And says, "Excuse me, sir, do you know where I could find a snake?" And he looked, and with a very thick Irish accent, the mason looks at him, and he's like, the first thing in his mind, he's like thinking stranger danger. You shouldn't be talking to strangers. And second, it's a school day. What the hell, a young kid like you being out? And he just looks at him. He goes, "Maybe across the street in the high grass." And the kid looks at him. He says, "Very well, sir. Thank you." And he turns around, gets a scoop of mortar with his trowel, and goes looks again, and the kid's gone. And he's like, like, where'd he go? It's like, it was in the high grass. I mean, he didn't have time to really get into the high grass very deep. The kid just vanished, like nowhere. So he went home and told his girlfriend, which is one of my friends, that's how he got the job, tells her the story about this kid. He called him a gay foreign exchange student. And he's like, "What is he doing? Not in school?" And she goes, "What does this kid look like?" And he describes him. She knew the story about my little boy. And she goes, "You idiot, that's a ghost." And he goes, "No." He goes, "Yeah." She goes, "Yes." And she called me up at my card game. And she goes, "Listen to this idiot." She goes, "Listen to him." And he tells me the story. I said, "Oh, my God." I said, "Tomorrow morning, I'm going to bring you in the house, show you a picture, and you tell me if this is the kid." And he didn't know the story. He didn't know anything. He comes in. I go, "Is that the kid?" He goes, "Yeah." I go, "He died turn of the century." Yeah. But he had a real conversation with him, and he was real. Like, when I saw him in the house, I thought he was my son. This kid was real, solid, moved, indistinguishable between before a person. Yeah. Oh, so everything we build here has something in it. So I believe in energy, right? And energy from all kinds of artifacts and everything. So this little piece of bronze right here, which is cemented in forever, came from an architectural dig in Croatia. And I bought it and kind of destroyed history now, but I thought it belonged on my wall, because I want to bring in that kind of ancient history into this wall. Because I don't want anything new. I don't want new energy. I don't want new. There's plenty of new things, right? It's not about new. It's about coming someplace and feeling that energy, because you feel like you're there. You've got some kind of energetic memory. So I think that's so important. So everything I do, if you look, there's little pieces hidden everywhere. As you can see, when we come up this area, this all, obviously when it's done, it'll all be landscaped.
But everything I build, so this pillar, for instance, over here to your left, we have ancient Egyptian gods sitting down. And as you go through, you're going to see other Egyptian artifacts in that wall.
So we're here in the windmill, which George has some more stories to tell us about things that have happened here.
So I have story after story after story, but let's start with one of the first stories that I remember, and probably one of the most powerful. So I had one of the first employees I had. He worked part-time for me and actually slept in the carriage house while it was being built because he needed a place to stay down here. So he'd work. He was a mason, like lugging mortar during the day, and he'd lay bricks for me during the night. So he was doing my floor. And I was at my health club, and I had a message while I was on the racquetball court, and it was him saying, "I'm not going to work here anymore. I'm leaving." He goes, "What the hell's going on there?" He goes, "I left the lights on." He goes, "Forget it." He goes, "I'm out." And he's like freaking out. And it's like, what the hell's going on? And I mean, he was like legitimately terrified. I mean, like legitimately terrified. And I called him up and I go, "What the hell are you talking about?" And he goes, "I was in there laying the bricks." And he goes, "I heard someone walk down the stairs." He goes, "I figured someone was in the building." And so he goes, "I heard him walk down the stairs, walk across the floor." And he goes, "They went to the staircase, where the staircase would have been." He goes, "But there was no staircase." He goes, "There's no way anyone got up there." And he says, "I heard him walk back again. And then they came back again." And he goes, "I was out the door."
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. And it was, I mean, to listen to him, he was like so unnerved. It wasn't even funny. And I've heard that same exact thing. I know Tony, who works with me, he's heard that. Everyone who's been in here for any length of time, you hear the footsteps. And you could, like, you literally feel the footsteps. It's like someone there. So last year during August, again, we had the same thing. And I was at the top of that staircase. I felt someone's presence. You could feel the weight on the stairs. I was out of here. So it's like, I'm not staying for that. And it really is. I mean, it gets you to your brain can't even process it. It really is something that is beyond rational thought. And you try to rack and you're just gone. I mean, I have no way to other saying it. I'm not a coward, but I'm not hanging out for it because I don't know what it is.
Right.
So.
I'm out. Yeah. George, you mentioned previously that you feel like this windmill is the kind of the focal point, the key on this property.
Yeah, I'm completely convinced of that. So when I moved in to this building, one of the first projects, I wasn't tackling the house. I tackled this building. I was convinced that there were people buried in the basement. I was an atheist. They were buried in the floor of this building. And I had a Kubota tractor. I took out that window that's behind you. And I remember driving my Kubota tractor in here. And I dug out the bottom of this, you know, 5-6 feet. Mm-hmm. All around the well, all around the ground. I couldn't find a thing. But I was absolutely convinced there were dead bodies in here. And I can't explain why. And yet again, I'm an atheist. But yet I'm convinced there are dead bodies in the floor. I don't understand why. So what I did is, if we'll show you in a minute, there's a little secret surprise underneath the staircase over there as a memorial to my feelings about this basement, about this ground floor here. Yeah.
And now your daughter had a very recent experience.
Yeah, like here. 2 weeks ago. This was just before Halloween. It was on that Saturday, just before Halloween. We were out to dinner. We came home, her and her boyfriend. And they want to take a look at the windmill because he's like, "Oh, I want to go in the windmill just before Halloween and feel it." And I said, "Okay, go ahead." And he goes ahead and he goes on the second and third floor. And the weird thing is the security cameras didn't trigger.
Huh.
So I'm waiting for the lights to go off and I'm waiting to see footage. And I get notifications. I had no notification whatsoever. Mm-hmm. She goes up to the second floor and she's standing up there. I'm halfway up and all of a sudden she starts coming back and it's like, what the hell's going on? And she starts freaking out, and she felt like someone was grabbed her by the shoulders and was pushing her down the stairs.
Oh,
and
God.
She would not leave that little platform at the top of the second floor.
No. Nope.
She was done.
Nope.
She was done, and she was yelling up to her boyfriend, "Come on, I got pushed, I got something grabbed me." She goes,
wow.
Yeah. So.
And you'd think after.
And I witnessed it, too, and she was, like, legitimately terrified.
Right.
That means she was, like, gone.
For the amount of time that you've all been here, you know, it seems unusual, like, to be still at it.
No, it keeps on going.
Just constant.
It's just, yeah, it goes in spurts. And there's no, like, I can't say it's every, you know, it is every August. I can guarantee every August. But then in between those, it really becomes random cycles. And some of them are very profound, like I saw the little boy, mm-hmm. and that wasn't in August, and he looks, you know, like a little boy. And other times was like in the wintertime, I'd see things. So there really is no rhyme or reason.
So I don't. We are in, what, the second room of the...
Second floor.
Second floor of this. This is a cool room in itself. I like this room. I like the vibration. We came up and did like a mini investigation this past August. And George was here. And Anthony was here. And we came up and we sat around this table. And George, why don't you tell them what happened? You were there.
I witnessed the whole thing. So I was filming Ron because Ron was basically, it seemed like he was like going to float away. And and I'm like filming. It's like, okay, it looks like I got everything. And we all cameras, Tony had a camera. We all had cameras and everything. Everything seemed to have gone great. No one got anything. No EVPs, no record, no nothing, no data. My disc, which I've never had a problem with, said it was full after 4 minutes. Yet I was showing recording. So when I was recording, it looked like it was recording. When I played it back, I had 4 minutes of data. Zero from inside the windmill.
It was myself, Leslie.
Tony.
Tony. Who was the fourth? Wasn't there a fourth?
Yeah, there was.
Didn't Jim come with you?
Yeah, it was a guy, yeah.
Okay, so it was Jim. So I was sitting here. And one of these chairs, or no, it was a different chair. It was the
No, I think you were sitting the in the party. The party right there, that black chair right there.
Yeah, the party. I was in that party.
Yep.
And we were sitting with our hands like this on the table and doing the seance thing. And honest to God, I felt like I was being lifted. It was felt like, so I took my feet off the floor to make sure I wasn't pushing myself up or anything.
I witnessed the whole thing.
Yeah, he was there. And the chair started rising and on it. But the other thing, after we stopped and broke, there was a mark on my hand. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
Who got that picture of that?
I remember that.
That's when you get a picture.
Yeah, I remember that. I think that was it Leslie?
I'll have to find out.
I definitely remember that.
Yeah, there was a mark on my hand that appeared, and I forget what it was, but it was on my hand, and we have no idea where it came from. Because my hands were like this above the board. It was not like I was resting on something. And there are other floors. So we're going to go up and take a look at the next one. Here's the next one.
Ooh, I'm tied up here.
Remember I told you a story downstairs?
Yeah.
So where you're standing is exactly where the electrician's girlfriend would have been standing when she was caressed and breathed on.
Oh, my God. I feel my chest feels so tight up here.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Right?
Remember my friend Kayla came up here, George?
We get tight.
Oh, yeah. Tell Tony, tell that story.
It's like almost like you can't catch your breath.
Yeah, this is just this summer.
Yeah. I brought a friend here from Pittsburgh, and she wanted to explore, and she came up to this fort in particular, and she turned tail and ran from here.
Yeah.
She said her whole chest was collapsing, and she couldn't breathe.
But Tony ran faster than she did.
I did.
Yeah. I'm having that right now. Like,
you feel like your chest is
just
exactly
so like
what she said.
Like I'm like,
yep,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I told another paranormal team.
Yeah.
I told the woman about it, and actually I was here with a friend of mine too because I wanted him to tell some of his stories that he saw. So I told her the story about that. She goes, "I've been doing this for 5 years. Nothing scared me."
Uh-huh.
She goes, "Nothing."
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, I'm in the basement with some of the team. And the walkie-talkies are going insane. And we're like, okay, we run out. We see her in the driveway crying.
Oh, no.
So she said that she was standing there, right? And they have it on film. She goes, "Guys, I feel something. Guys, do you see anything? Do you see anything?" She goes, "Oh, my God." And then she goes, "Ah!" She said she felt a hand come up under her shirt. And try to undo her bra strap.
Oh, my God.
And she melted down.
Uh-huh. That would do
it
for me.
Yeah, but it was the best, guys. And it was, like, legit, because she was, she was, like, literally terrified.
I would be.
And then another girl came in on tape at that table down below. She was pretty attractive. And she was sitting there, and the guy's filming her. And she's asking questions. And all of a sudden, she almost knocked over the table. She stood up so quickly. She felt a hand go up her shorts.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
But, Andy, have you noticed since we've got here, we've gone up from the basement, the first floor, second floor, now third floor. Mm-hmm. You notice how the energy has changed in each of the floors, how it feels differently?
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
I hope I can breathe on the fourth floor.
One more to go. What could that be?
Kind of wondering. All right, here we go.
We're on the fourth floor of the windmill. I am very winded and very tight in my chest. So, but George has more stories for us. What have you got?
So the stories that I would have would be experiences we've had up here with no one below us. So we've done. I've been part of other investigations where people have asked questions and we'll have responses from the floor below us, or we'll hear like mumbling that responds to the questions that we have. You can actually hear, like when you ask a question, you know, do you have anything else to tell us? And you can hear like something exactly like that. It's inaudible, but you hear a response, and then we play it back on the EVPs, and you can hear like literally like words. You don't have to fine tune them at all. These are real words that we're listening to. And my favorite one was when a group came here. I was up here with the woman's sister, a daughter, excuse me. And the last question she asked is, she goes, "Is there anything else you want to tell us?" And we heard the rumbling. And she plays it back. And we heard clear as day, "Get out." And she looks at me. And then she's looking at the window, which is the fourth floor window. And I go, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm seeing if I jump out, if I can make it." And she was terrified. I mean, terrified about going through that. I go, "Isn't this what you live for?" She goes, "Hell no." She goes, "You heard him." She goes, "I'm getting the hell out of here." So it was unbelievable to witness that from like a professional who's like, this is like your bread and butter, to see how terrified she was when the guy said, "Get out." That was more than memorable. And I will never forget it. I'll be an old man sitting in my rocking chair, and I'll remember the get out.
Oh, my God. They always see that.
And we're in the windmill on the fourth floor, and I'm with Sue Allen's daughter.
Yes, I know her.
Yeah, so we're up on the fourth, and we can hear on the third floor, like, like every time she'd say something, and then she plays it back to her question. She goes, "Is there anything else you want to tell us?" She plays it back, and the voice says, "Get out." and to see her face, she, like, looks, and we're on the fourth floor, and she looks, and she's looking at the window, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm wondering if I jump, can I make it?" I go, "Isn't that what you wait for?" She goes, "You heard him." She goes, "I'm not going down there."
And we are back, and now we have Anthony Hegel here with us. And Anthony is the caretaker?
You can say that, or handyman, kind of.
Resident handyman.
I say he runs the place.
He's the boss. Not quite, but we get it. So how long have you been living on premises?
I've probably been living here about 4 years, maybe 4.5 years now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you live in the carriage house?
Yes.
Okay. So what interesting things have you experienced here?
There's been a few things. When I work, I like to put my phone inside someplace safe because I get a lot of sawdust all over me and stuff like that. So one day I put my phone in the windmill and continue to work outside. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, George is calling me saying, "What do you want? What do you need?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, you've been calling me. I've got messages from you. I've got, FaceTime messages." And,
FaceTime.
He called me like 4 or 5 times. What's going on with that? And I swear my phone was in that windmill, not on my person, the whole entire time.
Oh, man.
The whole time. So that was a really bizarre incident.
Yeah, he left me a voicemail. Do I have it? So I have the voicemail and everything. And we actually did a little thing in the windmill after that. But it was amazing. Because I'm at lunch, and it's like he calls again. He leaves a voicemail. And it's like, then finally... He FaceTimed, and I told one of my clients that we're on lunch with, I go, "I got to take this. This has got to be important." And it was just like, the FaceTime was like nothing. It was
nothing.
Just like black. And it was like you were walking around or something. It's like, okay, this is just weird.
What did it say?
And I called back, and then Tony didn't answer. But the voicemail he left, it could sound like my voice. It sounded like me talking. And it's like, yeah, I understand. Okay, I'll get to it. And then you hear, clear as day, you hear, "Help me." because it's a woman, and this is in August, right, of about 4 years, about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
This was right after COVID when we had the masks and everything. So, yeah, it's 2020. So, and this is in August of 2020. And you hear clear as day on the recording a woman going, "Help me." Well, coincidentally, in August of every year, what do we hear coming from the windmill? A woman screaming at 3:30 in the morning, yelling, "Help me."
Oh, my God.
So, and Tony, I told warned Tony of that. When he moved in, one of the scariest things that happened to me here.
That's really...
Yeah. And he didn't believe me. He goes, "No." I go, "Yeah." I go, 3:30. I go, "You're going to hear the screams. Don't worry." And you called me.
I called you. It shook me that much that I had to call George and explain to him what happened. Like, clear as day, screaming right outside the window and woke me right out of bed, right out of sleep. And, yeah, I was almost in my truck sleeping after that. It was bad. That was probably one of the scariest times. That was clear as day.
But everyone who's lived in the carriage house has said that for 20 years.
Oh my God, literally. Yeah.
And it's always August, and that's why I want like you to come during August, because everything happens in August. It's
like,
then it's sprinkled throughout the year, but like August is just insanity.
Something horrendous.
Yeah. Happened. That's what I think.
So, anything besides the phone?
Definitely footsteps in the windmill.
Oh.
If I'm standing in the windmill, one time I walked out, there's for sure a boot above me.
Really heavy.
Yeah. And I didn't realize until I actually exited the windmill and I thought about, like, did I just really hear that? And
yeah.
And then all my hair started sticking up and I was like, okay, doors are staying open from now on.
Tell me about the cameras. Remember when the cameras triggered last year? We had like 400 video clips coming from the windmill.
Yeah.
Just went off.
Yep.
And I called him up. I said, "Tony, come here. I want to put a camera in the windmill."
Did it start from the third floor and went down?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was just it was going haywire in there, and all these clips on the security cameras just going off. No one's in there. There's no reason why it should be going off. I called Tony. I go, "Just watch me," because I was terrified.
Right.
I mean, you really get spooked. That's the only part of the property that really scares the heck out of me.
And you can see it in his face that night.
Yeah, because I said, "Okay, I'm going to bring a recorder. I'm going to put it on the second floor, and I'm going to put a camera up there." And all of a sudden, I start going up the stairs, and I felt like, you know when someone's on the staircase, you feel the weight of their steps coming? I felt someone start walking at me on the staircase, and I was just like, "I'm out of here." Remember? I was just
like, "Never mind."
I was gone. Gone. Nope, forget such a... Nope, gone. Yeah.
That was the first time I've ever seen you rattle, too. That was pretty significant.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
It's weird because the cameras would, like, third floor would go off, start notification, then the second floor would be notifying, you know, it was like, it had like a pattern, like a rhythm or something.
Oh my God.
It was very bizarre that all these, but it was like 400 clips. It wasn't like just, okay, we got like five. This thing was just like
off and on.
I still haven't reviewed them.
Oh, guys, thank you so much. This has just been amazing, and I'm sure you've probably got 100 more stories you can tell us. But
about 500 more.
I think we're going to probably go out and walk around for a bit, and we'll talk some more about the buildings and experiences, maybe more experiences you've had, and the history and everything. So we'll be right back.
Did you want me to record you getting the door?
Do you want me to?
Yeah, why not?
I would spin it so she can get the full effect of it.
Let me see. Well, I gotta go buy it.
Yes, exactly.
Are we ready?
No. Keep on going. No.
Just keep going.
I think she wants you to get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there you go.
Now spin it.
Now say, "I'll get the door for you."
I'll get the door for you. Oh, this is too much like work. Watch this. I'll disappear. Trick.
All right.
Now you see me. Are you ready?
Are you?
Yeah.
I don't know how to do this.
Now he can't get out. He's stuck.
What's he doing? Is it moving?
Are you stuck?
Oh, there he goes.
Oh, he's gone! Poof!
That was too much like work.
If only it was that simple.
Take my meditation room.
built on pyramid technology and Wogon technology. So the whole inside of the structure is built with the layers that Wilhelm Reich would have done with his Wogon accumulators. So we come in, we meditate, and it's the most incredible meditation I've ever had. I was in Glastonbury during meditation, and it came to me that, oh my God, I'm up here, I'm doing this meditation, but I'm not connected to the earth. Those came out of that meditation from Glastonbury. And what a difference.
And what are they exactly, George?
They ground you, and these are grounding rods, and they're connected underneath the floor, and they drive right into the earth below us. So that when you're doing the meditation, you have all this energy, the energy flows through you, flows right to the earth.
So what is this, the purpose of this chandelier and the dome?
It's supposed to be, supposed to collect the energy, and literally, this crystal is right above my heart when I do my meditations. So it's going to energize me and connect me to the earth right through. So I get the full force of every kind of modality, basically. I get pyramid technology, I get the crystals, I have the Ogon technology, everything is coming right at me in this room.
It's amazing.
And it really is. It's like nothing I've ever experienced. I wouldn't trade this room for anything. Every week, my daughter will record my meditations. And now I'm getting to the point where, and I don't remember any of them. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't remember anything. But she'll get to the point where she says, oh my God, I cried so much during that last one. And I say, what the hell did I say? But I'm afraid to listen to them because I don't want that part of my brain to kind of bring and complete a story or something like that. So I stay away from them until someday, some point in time, we'll try to do a book or something. But I stay away intentionally from any of that, because I want to make sure what's coming to me is pure and my other part of my brain is interacting with it, right, creating a story.
And you, I think sometimes it's not made to go to the consciousness, it's supposed to stay in that subconscious level.
Yeah, so I don't want to hear it. I want to give her the information, but I know some of them, I mean, like literally, she's been like crying when we come out of it, and I'll look at her and she goes, that was beautiful. She goes, this is what this is all about. Like, what did I say?
All right. We're here.
We're here in the wood shop. We just thought we'd throw something together, but
no, this has been a great day.
Yeah,
George, we want to thank you so much, and
you love
me as well,
yes,
for your input into
such
this
a great
show.
Day.
It was
really.
The place is amazing. Keep up the good work, and you know, I look it up on the wall there, and I saw your tribute to your father.
Yes,
he was in the service.
He loved woodworking. So that's why Dad is here looking over us.
That's
amazing. I think that's great. So anyways, we want to thank you so much for being with us today and hosting us. And we wish you the best of luck in the future.
Yeah. Thank you. I'd love to have you back.
Oh, we'd love to come down.
You answered that one pretty
good. I know. Like, when can we come down?
So until next time, everyone. Good night.
We will have explored the house. So
that's true.
Yeah,
so.
We can explore the
house.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
That was the end, you know. So until next time, everyone, good night and God bless.
Thanks for watching.
Bye-bye.
From ghoulies to ghosties, long-leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.